You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 22nd of September 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I thought today I would continue with the series that we began last week, an introduction to nationalism. And I'm hoping that I'm going to cover most of the subjects associated with nationalism in this series. And in the last episode, I was talking about the war and why it is that British ethno-nationalists or American ethno-nationalists support National Socialism, or at least don't look at it in a negative light when you bear in mind that both Britain and America went to war against Germany. And it's not so much support for another country as support for the system itself. And as I pointed out last week, that does not mean approving of the persecution of Jews or supporting the execution of Jews for being Jewish or any of these ideas that are put about by Hollywood. It's because National Socialism put the interests of the people first. And of course, the German people does not include the Jews. They are the Jewish people. So the National Socialists put the Germans first. Because of this, Jews worldwide or international Jews were not happy because it meant that they lost the privileged positions they had in German society. They were one particular group of them were particularly annoyed, the bankers, because Hitler totally revamped the banking system and removed usury from it and removed Germany from the gold standard. And this was something that worked really well. We had what was called the economic miracle, Germany's economic miracle. Hitler was made into Time Man of the Year because while the rest of the world was going into a depression, Germany was having a manufacturing renaissance. 6 million people that were out of work when the National Socialists came into power, those 6 million people were put into work. And the people that supported communism were converted to supporting National Socialism. And we went to war against them. And that war was the worst thing that could have ever possibly happened to our race, was going to war like that. A family can never win. If two brothers are having a fight, the family can only lose. And that's why we would say that we lost that war. It may have been that the Corporation of Britain, the Corporation of the United Kingdom, that won the war. But the white race lost that war. We lost from the moment we picked up arms against our brothers. As a nationalist, we should not wish to interfere in other nations, in other nations' business. It's ridiculous today that we are encouraged to support interventions in places like Syria, Libya, possibly in China, and we're told it's because of the way that the Syrians are being treated or the way the Libyans are being treated. It's up to the Syrians to decide on who they wish to have as a government. It's up to the Syrians to decide on their laws. It's not up to us to interfere because we may not agree with what they are doing. We are responsible for the laws within our own country. And it's been since the war, since the white race lost the war, that this idea has come up of international law and universal human rights law, which has become an excuse to interfere in other countries' business. I mean, the Chinese are just amazed by the fact that we make such a fuss about the way that they treat minorities over there, or what's going on in Hong Kong. They have no interest in how the African states treat their African citizens. They invest money in Africa, in the Belt and Road Initiative, but they don't ask for political changes to be made by the Africans. The Africans are free to rule over themselves as they see fit. And this is the difference with the new system that we've had since the end of the war. It seeks to promote liberal values, progressive values all around the world in these traditionalist countries like India that had a 0.something divorce rate right up until the 90s. And now that we've pushed feminism and pornography over there, they have a problem with divorce. They have a problem with family breakdown. They have all these issues with lots of horrific rapes that are going on over there. And it's all down to these degenerate ideas that we push now. Now, the war itself, it wasn't just Germany against the rest of the world. It was traditional Christian values against modernist, progressive immorality, which was represented by the Soviet Union on the immorality side and Germany on the moral Christian values side. What a lot of people don't realize is that there were millions of people that supported Germany from countries like France, Belgium, Romania, that fought in these Waffen-SS units on the Eastern Front against the Soviet Union to liberate the countries that the Soviet Union had occupied, places like Lithuania, Latvia. They had a brief respite of a few years under German rule before the Soviets went back there. And as soon as the Soviets were back there, they got rid of all the churches, they executed the priests, they sent all the patriots and nationalists off to the gulag. It was horrific. I think in some instances, like 25% of the men in the country were murdered in some of the Baltic instances. And this is the reason why states or countries like Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania are still extremely anti-Russian to this day because of what was done to them by the Soviet Union. And nationalists in Europe saw this threat. They could see this threat that was coming. They could see what had happened to Russia once the Soviets had taken over. And they united behind this German push to eliminate communism from Europe. And if it wasn't for that push, the rest of Europe would have been taken by the Soviet Union. When Hitler went into his Operation Barbarossa, when he went into Russia to try and stop the Soviets, they were all lined up in battle formation. The reason why he was able to get in there is because all the troops were lined up ready to invade Northern Europe. And we know from the declassified Soviet communications at the time from Stalin that is what he was planning to do. He had built up a huge military force. And while Britain was tied up with fighting against Germany, the Soviets were going to invade. So it was really a preemptive strike that Hitler took against the Soviet Union. There's actually a speech that he gave that explains a lot of this as his reasoning for going in there. And once that had happened, you had lots of people joining these Waffen-SS units, these separate legions. There was even a British SS unit, the Legion of St. George. There was an Estonian one. There was a Finland one. The Latvian SS units and the Lithuanian SS units, they were absolved of all Holocaust crimes at the Nuremberg tribunals because all they fought was on the Eastern Front. They were fighting to prevent their countries from being taken over, fighting to allow the time for refugees to get out before the Soviets came back. Because the Soviets had taken over these countries for a year or two before the Germans went in and liberated them. So, and they were actually used as the guards at the Nuremberg Tribunal. They had Latvian and Lithuanian SS guards there with white helmets on, because they couldn't be charged with these crimes, because they were just protecting their countries, basically. So this shows that the idea that we have now, that everybody was against Hitler, he was a nasty, evil man, is not the truth. And we can see that since the war, since the white race lost the war, we've had all these degenerate ideas promoted as being normal. And it's gradually got worse and worse. You can say that it probably started off with divorce and feminism and homosexuality. And this was being promoted in the Weimar period in Germany. This is one of the reasons why the Germans rebelled against this. And then after the war, this has been promoted incessantly, particularly feminism. And people might ask, well, why would you be against women being equal to men? Women always were seen as equal to men. If anything, they were seen as having more value than men, because only women can give birth. And as I pointed out last week, the thing that has the most value is the children of the nation, because they are the only thing that can actually create value. Everything else is an inanimate object. Banknotes can't produce anything. It's only living flesh and blood human beings that can create things. So women were seen as probably having more value than men because of that. A man would always rescue women and children first, or at least they always used to. A man would open the door for a woman. And before the promotion of pornography and the sexualization of everything, men would look upon women as sisters and mothers. And women would all look fairly similar. They would wear national costume, national dress. The Welsh would wear these Welsh dresses and these Welsh hats that people have probably seen. And that was the same everywhere. If you look at old photographs, the women will all be wearing similar things. They won't be trying to look sexy. They won't be trying to catch a man's eye. They won't all be competing amongst one another for men, which is what we get now. And I think they were a lot happier back then. They tried to find a husband with the idea that they would settle down, they would be with that man for the rest of their lives, and they would have children with him. And the idea of divorce wasn't really known. After the war, though, we had contraception, and we had this promotion of sleeping around, basically. We had this Kinsey report. Kinsey was a communist, and he faked a lot of the research that he did. He was an absolute pervert as well. He was a pedophile, and he came out with a lot of information saying that lots of people were homosexual, lots of people were sleeping around, and this isn't really going to harm anyone. And it was based on research that had been done by Wilhelm Reich, which showed that if people were sexualized, if they were masturbating, they weren't praying. And this was used to demoralize the church, the Roman Catholic Church in particular, and the nuns. And this progressive teaching was taught to them that sex before marriage was okay, masturbation was okay. And once people are sexualized and they start thinking that you can have sex outside of marriage and sex is for pleasure and it's not for producing children, then people forget their traditional Christian morals. We also had atheism that is then being pushed, and the idea that there is no God. We had evolutionism that is being pushed, the idea that instead of being the pinnacle of God's creation, the absolute top of God's creation, we are descended from monkeys. We come from the animals. We're not man. We're not something different. We are just descended from the animals. So we had all these ideas that were then being pushed under this disguise of being humanitarian and enlightened, and them being good ideas that are good for us. I mean, why would you want a woman to stay with a man if she's not happy? That would be the argument that would be pushed for divorce. Of course, that pays no attention to the children that are permanently scarred by something like that happening. Why wouldn't you want to enjoy having sex with as many different people as possible and keep it exciting. Well, what about the fact then that you don't produce that long-lasting bond? And if you have multiple partners, you are far less likely to be able to settle down for life. People that are virgins when they get married, I think something like 99% of their marriages, probably 100% of their marriages, last for their whole life. And they provide a stable foundation for their children. Ever since the beginning of time, there's been an evil force that has sought to disrupt mankind. And it does it by appealing to our ego. We can look back at our earliest myths, and we look at the Genesis creation myth, and Eve is tempted to eat the apple by the serpent because he flatters her, and he says, if you eat this fruit, your eyes will be opened and you will be just like the gods. And it's the same today. We're flattered with these ideas, and they appeal to our ego, but they're all just there to subvert us. Then we got this promotion of homosexuality. Well, why wouldn't you want to legalize homosexuality? Why would you want to persecute these people that can't change the way that they are, and they just happen to love their own gender rather than loving the opposite gender? That's all it is. Why shouldn't we legalize it and accept this? And that's the argument that is put across. Again, there is no attention there paid to how homosexuals are created. They will try and tell you that people are born this way, but there is no evidence to show that they are born this way. But the majority of homosexuals were molested when they were children. And this is why today we see homosexuals advocating for the lowering of the age of consent all the time. And it's probably a fact that the older homosexuals that molest the younger ones, they probably think that the younger one is showing homosexual signs anyway. They probably see it that they are just bringing the latent homosexuality out in the young person. But nobody is born a homosexual. And it's child molestation, basically. Much as they will try and say, well, these are young adults, they just happen to be a little bit underage, it is still child molestation. And being a homosexual means that you are not fulfilling the natural role that life has. A homosexual is not able to reproduce itself. A homosexual can only recruit other homosexuals. So from the legalization of homosexuality, and of course then, because it's legal, it has to be taught as being somehow equal to heterosexuality, it has to be normalized. And what we've effectively done is normalized and legalized the end result of child molestation. Instead of doing all we can to prevent children being molested, we've legalized the results of it. And I'm not saying here that all homosexuals are child molesters. They certainly aren't all child molesters. But a much larger portion of them are than you find among the heterosexual community. Homosexuals make up 1-2% of the population, and yet in the prisons amongst pedophiles, about 35% of the pedophiles are in there for abusing young boys. So that's either 15 to 30 times more likely to be a pedophile if the person is a homosexual, going by the prison statistics. So as a nationalist, we seek to protect our children. So as a nationalist, we are against the promotion of homosexuality. We are against the normalization of homosexuality because of the threat that it can be to our children. And of course, from there, we have gone on to the promotion of transgenderism and transsexuals. 20 years ago, transsexuals, transgenders, they were just looked upon as, quite funny people, basically. I don't think there was anybody was anti them. People felt sorry for them. People saw them as being entertainers, maybe being the life and soul at the nightclub, something like that. And we've gone from that to this idea that gender is fluid and we should be encouraging children not to see themselves as male or female. And if a young boy likes playing with dolls, then that young boy should be told that he is a girl and he should be given hormones to physically change him. Just in the space of 20 years, this has happened again, which is harmful to the children. If an adult man wishes to dress as a woman and thinks that he was born in the wrong body, that's fine. That is up to him if he wants to do that. We should not be forced to pretend, to go along with the pretense that the man is a woman and use these pronouns. We should not be forced to. Most people would do so out of common courtesy if that is what was required of them. But to use the law to force people to do that and to pretend that what we are seeing is not actually what we are seeing is exactly what we see in 1984 when Winston is told that 2 + 2 = 5. We're told that a man in a dress is a woman. And this idea, again, it is sold to us as if it's a good thing. We're told that boys and girls don't actually reach their full potential because they are hemmed in by these gender stereotypes. And what would be a much better idea is if we didn't give any gender to our children. And the way to do that is to punish girls if they're crying and get them to play with boys' toys and to encourage boys to talk about their feelings and to do all these opposite things to these children, which is really going to mess them up. Instead of teaching them what it means to be a boy and bringing out all the things that a boy can do that a girl can't do, we insist that boys and girls in schools, they have to do things that only both of them can do, which means that the boys are restricted to only doing things that girls are good at doing. So of course, then we see an increase in girls in education and girls getting better results than boys. And we end up with confused boys. And when there is an emergency situation, say, which is when a male should take charge and save the day, you will end up with the males just as emotionally in just as an emotional state as the women. The whole point of being a man is to protect and preserve. And if you teach boys not to be men, to behave like women, it just weakens the whole nation. All of these things that are being pushed as being good ideas and positive ideas for us are just harmful to us. The same as this idea that miscegenation is good. If we all interbreed with non-whites, then everybody will be non-white and then there'll be no more racism. There'll be no more identity then. There'll be no more sense of heritage. There will be a lowering of the IQ to such a standard that nobody will be able to maintain civilization any longer. It would destroy all the different national identities, all the different national cultures that we have. All these ideas, all these progressive ideas are damaging to us, which is why we are against them as nationalists. And they have all really picked up pace since the end of the war, which fits in with this idea that the white race lost that war. And you can't really say that anybody won it because everybody is harmed by this. There are certain groups in society that have benefited from this. Oligarchs benefit from this. They benefit from taking away people's identity. And we do find that it's these big corporations and banks and all the rest of them that promote these degenerate ideas. We also find a lot of Jews involved in promoting these ideas, a lot of Jewish advocacy groups that promote them. And that's because it is to their benefit to subvert the other nations, because we are in a competition with all these other races. We are competing for territory. We are competing for space. And these other groups do what is in their group's best interests. And we are being taught to do things that are not in our best interests. Our media, as I pointed out in an earlier episode of this, is mainly in the hands of these other groups, and it promotes ideas that are of benefit to them and that are not of benefit to us. Again, if you had a nationalist state, it would insist that the media was in the hands of the people. The people that the media was intended for. You can't have your competitors telling you what public opinion is or telling you what geopolitics are, because it's all going to be skewed in their favour. And again, this isn't to blame them for doing that. This is entirely natural. Kevin MacDonald has done lots of work into evolutionary psychology and group strategies, and people groups over time, they develop strategies to advance their interests, often at the expense of other people's interests that are around them. And it is just natural to do that. It is a part of life. The problem is, when you have multicultural countries, you have all these different groups that are advancing their own interests. And we as white people are being told that to advance our own interests is racist. It somehow means we hate these other people groups. We don't hate these other people groups. We want these other people groups to be able to grow naturally in the way that their makeup dictates, the way that their racial soul dictates. If we look around Europe, we can see we have all these different types of European culture, because that is the way that the subgroup expresses itself. That's why we have different cultures. And again, if you look at Chinese culture, Japanese culture, it is expressed in a different way to European culture. China and Japan are homogenous. So what we see there is the physical expression of their racial soul. What we now see in Europe is not the physical representation of the different European nations' soul. What we see is a representation of multiculturalism, which means ugly buildings, lots of rubbish, lots of crime, lots of fear, lots of mistrust, lots of degenerate art, lots of ugly art, because life has become ugly. And instead of creating beautiful masterpieces, people recreate the ugliness that they see around them, particularly in architecture. You will see the most ugly things being praised nowadays as wonderful buildings or wonderful sculptures. And they're absolutely hideous because they are representing what is going on around us. The effect of this degenerate culture that we have, this dysgenic effect of it, is to promote neurosis and depression among our people. That's why they have to take all these pills and medications. This is why we have one of the reasons why we have such a high suicide rate. And it all comes from going against nature, and it all comes from going against our morality. I would say it's Christian morality, because that is at the root of it. That is where we find all the writings that teach us and give us laws that we should keep. And if we had kept to, we wouldn't have these problems today. I'm not saying that before we were Christian, we weren't moral. I am sure that we were. But you don't find writings like the Ten Commandments and all the rest of the stuff that we find in the Christian Bible looking through Greek texts or Roman texts or even the Havamal. So we've turned our back on Christian morality at the end of the war. And that's what this war was about. It was about Christian morality against degenerate communist atheism. And it was the degenerate communist atheism that won the war. And this is why we're in the situation that we are in today. And we have to put up with it, basically, because we are living with the consequences of those actions. We cannot undo our actions as a people. We cannot go back in time to the 1950s or the 1930s. We cannot undo the fact that we have contraception and abortion now. We cannot undo these things. What we can do is mitigate their effects. And this is what Patriotic Alternative advocates for, this is what Radio Albion advocates for, is mitigating the effects of these things, standing up for our people, trying to form groups that advocate for our people, supporting politicians that do things for our people, criticize politicians that don't, but understand that in order to get to the position that they are in, they have to be extremely compromised, because that is the world that we live in now. That is the political system that we live under now. They have to be friends of Israel. They have to support Islam. Otherwise, they would not be able to get into the position that they are in. And we just have to live with this. We have to understand that that is the way that the world is, and we have to conform to the way that the world is, but still do what is best for us. And so long as we are not miscegenating ourselves, so long as we are not promoting homosexuality ourselves, or engaged in usury, or addicted to pornography, or anything like that, we are doing the right thing, and we are setting a good example. And you will find that if you set a good example, you will meet other people that are of a like mind who also set a good example, and people will take notice of that, and they will copy that, because that's naturally how we are supposed to be. All this degeneracy is unnatural to us, and the only reason people go along with it is because they don't think there is an alternative. They don't think there is anybody that is actually speaking up for them. And a lot of the time, when they see so-called nationalists speaking up for us, they're fools like this little veteran strutting around, shouting, effing and blinding into a loudspeaker, holding up traffic, making a fool of himself in a protest. They don't hear about nationalists like Patriotic Alternative going on a hike, or going on a paintballing day, or heritage building projects that they have, homeschooling. All these are the sort of things that we need to be doing. We're not going to be able to change things at the macro level. We're not going to be able to change things at the political level, but we can change things at the micro level. We can change things in our own lives, and we can improve the lives of those around us, and we can make people aware of why it is that we're in this situation today, why the world is in this situation. It's because we have made these mistakes in the past. And as a Christian, I know that we win in the end. And because I have faith in God, I don't get depressed by all of this, because I know that it is all a part of God's plan. And no matter how much wickedness and evil there is in the world, it will be turned into something good. And you just imagine how good it will be when compared to the wickedness of this world. And I don't want to get too Christian here, because we're not a Christian identity radio station or anything like that, but I don't want to leave people feeling depressed at this. But if you do have a faith in God, then you understand that all of this is to the greater good. We have eternal life. This life here is just the blink of an eyelid. It's just the blink of an eyelid. And all these horrors that we see here, they are all only happening on the mortal plane. And the reason why we have these tests is so that we can show that we have virtue. We can't understand the eternal things because we are mortal. But one day we will. If you're a an identity Christian, then you only see white people as having living souls. And if we see all these other races persecuting us, doing these terrible things, well, what does it matter if they don't have a living soul? We are the ones that survive and win in the end. And they might have it good here at the moment, but at what price? I mean, this is one way that you can look at it and not be hateful towards them, because this is just the way that things are. The only person we should really hate is the author of evil. Satan is who we should be hating, who is responsible for all these things, for all these temptations and all these things going wrong for the white race. That's who we should be hating. Everything else is a part of creation, and it is here to the greater glory of God, which is a mystery to us because we are mortal, but one day we will see it. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.